Kerry. I'm on a deadline at the moment, so keep it quick.
Oh, sorry, mate. Surbiton calling here. I've got big news. It's incredible. I'm watching this kid playing here, and he looks amazing. I can't believe how good he is. I think he's got something really special about him.
Well, it's a day one, and you found the champion already. I think you just need to calm yourself down a bit. Just remember, you haven't been doing this that long, so don't get carried away.
Well, I know that, but I'm certain I'm right. Honestly, I really am. Gary, trust me, I know what I'm talking about here. I know it seems ridiculous, but this guy, he's everywhere on court. He chases everything down. He's incredible.
Well, in this situation, I would go and speak to him. So you're a journalist. Go and speak to him. Go and investigate. Hey, what's his name anyway?
Alex Demenau.
Drop Shot, Chapter 4, El Australiano.
So, Kerry, this episode of Drop Shot is going to be a little bit different to how we've been doing the series so far. So as we come into Chapter 4, we've already covered the Americans, the Europeans, Next Gen, and now we're getting on to an episode that is a modern romance as much as it is to talk about an up-and-coming tennis star. So I think from there, you should set it up.
I guess you're referring to myself and Alex Demenau, and it's quite an interesting and slightly strange story in the way that he was the first player I really latched on to quite some time ago.
Which was at Surbiton, and I remember it well because we were planning for the summer and you were meant to start working with me at Queen's, and then suddenly we had this, you know, knee-jerk reaction to grass courts events that were happening elsewhere, and we were able to wing it and get you into Surbiton. And then suddenly you had this eureka moment of seeing this young Australian kid. So start there and we'll tell the story moving forward about how from Surbiton we ended up in Milan.
Well, you'd sent me out as part of an idea that we had to go and look at all the tournaments around England away from Wimbledon, because we were sure that it would be possible to go to these tournaments at the last minute and see some incredible players. And my first port of call before we were going to go to Queen's, which was always going to be one of our ideas, my first port of call was Surbiton. And I thought it was a really strange idea to go to somewhere so suburban as Surbiton, or Suburbiton as people call it, and go and watch tennis. I thought, well, who will he get there? And I was kind of surprised. The first people I saw were people like Jeremy Shardy, who's a pretty highly ranked player, and then I saw Leighton Hewitt. And then I just remember turning around, watching, there was a women's singles. It was Harriet Dart versus Katie Swan, young English players. And I thought, okay, well, that's understandable on a sunny summer's day in England. You see English players. And then I turned round on an adjoining court. I just saw this guy hit this ball with both feet off the ground, and I managed to take a photo on my iPhone at the same time. It was just serendipity. And I watched this guy who was just suddenly belting this ball, and I was about a yard and a half from him, and there was something intense, something miraculous, something wonderful happening in front of me. And this was happening in the first few hours of me stepping into a tennis tournament and seeing this kid. He looked so young and looked so sort of, I don't know, different to anything else I was looking at. And he was just bashing the hell out of this ball. And then I saw Leighton Hewitt again was sitting in a corner watching the game. And I'm going, oh, this is really odd. Leighton Hewitt's watching this guy. And I watched this game carry on. And this guy who was named Alex Demenau won the game. And I thought, okay, this kid's good. Or do I not know anything about tennis? Could this be something special I'm watching? He looks amazing. And I remember texting you and then phoning you to say, I think I've just discovered somebody who's incredible. And at that time he was, I don't know, ranked 100 and something or whatever. So not particularly highly ranked. But then I found out after I'd spoken to you that he'd just broken into the top 100 after this win. And so I asked for an interview with him in the press media centre.
Which you got.
Which I got.
We'll come back and get you. I think they're taking too long.
Just wave.
So I guess, really, Surbiton will always have a place in your heart for what it's done today.
Yeah, it was definitely a set goal. And, you know, a lot of hard work and hours on court have made that possible, you know, and especially having it on a tournament on grass. I'm definitely going to have it in my mind for the rest of my career. You know, this is where I first cracked the top 100, so and it's a great achievement for me, and I'm really proud of myself.
So there you were at your first tennis assignment, and it felt like you were witnessing a moment in history that, in the grand scheme of things, for tennis in 2018, it wasn't a massive event to see Demonauer break into the top 100. But for him, on a personal level, a young player coming through, it's a career milestone, and you're there talking to him about it.
Well, it's kind of like a career milestone for me as well. I felt part of his breaking into top 100, because when he sat down and started talking about it, I could feel that excitement, that joy from him. And this is the thing that I've discovered over the last year or whatever, is that you do feel immediate reaction from these players when things happen. And sitting there at close quarters with him, chatting to him about it, I could do nothing other than get as excited as he was. And that led to something else, because I found him very personable. I remember his agent coming to the door saying, "Oi, mate, don't you be too long with him. You know, you hurry up, and if you're too long, I'll hoik him out," kind of thing. And,
in that exact accent?
Pretty much. You know, my accents are pretty good, Gary, unlike you, who I don't think's ever done an impression in his life. Have you ever done impressions, Gary?
Let's not go there.
No, okay, probably best. And that was David Drysdale, and there was a playful way that he acted. You always have a fear of agents and managers, because they're always looking after their people. But there was something protective from David, but also at the same time, quite charming and playful. And I thought, this is really interesting. And I felt as though I was becoming a part of a story here, that there was something developing, that within my first few hours, I'd found somebody that I was really keen to follow through the summer. We should explain why this episode is called El Australiano. Alex has a very interesting background. His father is Uruguayan, his mother is Spanish, and that heritage came about because his father owned an Italian restaurant in Sydney, Australia, where he met his wife when she was a waitress there. So he's got this incredible, rich background of cultural heritage, and interestingly, he uses that when he's playing.
Okay, one thing also, I noticed that you swear in Spanish on court.
Well, that's happened. It happens sometimes, you know. It's more sort of talking to my coach, you know, saying, telling him why did I miss that and stuff like that. But, you know, it's what happens in the heat of the moment, you know. I think in both English and Spanish, and sometimes, you know, I don't know what comes out, you know, first thing that comes to mind.
No, it's interesting, because I speak Spanish. Yeah. I love hearing the Spanish coming out. Yeah. And will you be hoping to the next Gem Finals?
Yeah, for sure. That's something that's on the back of my mind. And, you know, it shows a great season. You know, you can't have a good start of the season and then nothing else, because then you won't get into that tournament. So it's all about persistence throughout the whole year, and something that I would love to play in at the end of the year.
So you witnessed something at the beginning of the summer that eventually was the story of your summer. But for us on a professional level, it's something that eventually took us across the UK and then took us to Milan, because we were aware of these young players already, just like most ardent tennis fans were. But then it was the stories that we started to learn about them. And as the next gen started approaching, it was really your first encounter with Demonauer, which took us all the way to Milan.
That's true. Following Demonauer, I started getting caught up in his story. And interestingly enough, I didn't see him lose. Whenever I watched him play, he won. The only times he lost was when I wasn't there. So that was quite funny. And that became a long-running gag with him, probably more for a gag for me.
Which is funny because it's the little sound bites throughout the interviews that we've had with him in chapter one. When we speak to Alex at the very end of day one of the next gen, you're there saying, hello, Alex, it's Kerry. And you say that it's 7-0 for us now, and people might not understand that. So why don't you explain now? Because in the interviews we're using here, you start talking about it's 1-0, it's 2-0, it's 6-0.
Yeah, that's the number of times that I'd seen him play and not lost. And so it became 6-love suddenly when I realised, oh, we could be talking in sets here. And then eventually it became 6-love or 2-2-love. And it just carried on. And I think he got it. I hope he did, because it was quite amusing to me. And it was kind of one of those asides. And it showed how much his story was interesting me.
Well, I don't know if you know, but I've now watched you 3 times and it's 3-0 for you. So, you know, I'm your lucky charm.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Hopefully you keep on watching me then.
Absolutely, I will do. All right, thanks ever so much as always. Cheers.
Thanks, Harry.
So you do know that now that means that's 6-love in the times that I've now seen you. And so that's the first set complete.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Thanks, you should come watch me more times.
Alex, it's Kerry here. We spent a few sessions together over the summer. From the depths of Surbiton when you broke in the top 100. It's been an amazing few months. It's great to see you here. How have you been?
I've been good. I've been in this sort of whirlwind. I've enjoyed every second of it. And I'm just out here trying to get better and having fun at the same time.
Oh, no, it's brilliant to see you. And I have to say that we've now started the second set of wins, because seeing you tonight, it's now 1-0 in the second set to us.
Let's keep it going.
So you've spoken about the experience of first seeing him, but then as the summer progresses, we're at Surbiton still, but as the summer progresses, you see more of Alex and your relationship with him improves because he's seen you more on the circuit. But what is it for the uninitiated, what is it for you that you've seen with Alex that sets him apart? Because you and I, which we'll find out in chapter 5, have a different opinion on who our favourite young players are. You're an Alex man. I'm a Stefanos guy, but why are you for Alex?
I think I'm for Alex because I was there at the start of something. Okay, he's been playing for years. He's been moving to this moment. But I think for all young players, breaking into the top 100 is a big and momentous occasion. The fact that since then he's just carried on flying up the ranks is absolutely incredible. And I think there's something I saw in him which I love in any creative field, sport, art, music, whatever. When you see a young person getting to grips with becoming an adult, really, with understanding what it takes to get them further along life's path of which they're part of. And I saw this in Alex. I saw this desire, this hunger, this ability. I mean, that's what really impressed me, was he did that thing, which that almost indescribable ability to make your opponent play one more shot, just one more shot. And he would be fetching balls that you could see the opposition player just turning away, thinking that's it, I've won the point. And somehow he would slide across the grass and he'd just slice one back at the opponent and invariably catch them off guards and you'd see them hit it into the net. And it's that sort of, how do I describe it? That determination, that will to win that you recognise and you think, this guy is going to go far. As long as he keeps free of injury, he's got all the ability. And then it's all about how his mindset is. And that seems tough.
And you spent a lot of time around his team last summer. So what was it you noticed?
What I've seen is a close-knit team. There seems to be, in England, we saw pretty much it was the agent, the coach and the player. There seemed to be a few friends that came along as well. Maybe it was family. I didn't know at the time. But it seems like a very close-knit group when these players go abroad. And watching them just sitting together, calmly, relaxed, talking to each other, you understand that the pressure is not being put on by the coach and the agent on the player. That's something else. They're all somewhere. All of this is a kind of a practice session in certain ways. It's getting these young players used to dealing with tournaments, with opponents they've never played before, to deal with crowds, courts, everything that goes with becoming a professional player and an adult player who's going to do well. And everything seems to be about nurture. You could see Alex make mistakes during games, and you'd see the only person who put pressure on himself was himself. And I found that really interesting, that the coach and the agent would just be clapping, okay, come on, let's think about it, let's move on. It's very interesting the way that they just keep positive. And that positivity surrounds Alex Demenau. Having got to know a little bit about him and his setup, I'd say that is the key to everything, is positivity.
So let's hear what his agent, David Drysdale, has to say about Alex.
Yeah, look, he was in the Australian junior program when he was 13, 14 years of age, and then his family moved back to Spain, and he continued to work in Spain, but played junior tennis for Australia in junior teams. And then he made the final of Junior Wimbledon a couple of years ago and played Shapovalov. And that was the first time I'd seen Alex play. I actually went and watched every match he played in juniors. I was going along with Leighton Hewitt, who I also manage. And so we were going to watch Alex play and see how he went. And I was really impressed with his attitude, the way he went about it. He lost the final to Dennis, but he was extremely impressive. And so I started talking to him, chatting with him, and the following February I signed him to start managing him. And I think because of the relationship I have with Leighton, it helped to be able to get Alex. And then he had a year where he struggled a little bit onto the senior tour, which is natural for kids coming out of juniors. And I can remember being in Nottingham, not this year, but last year, where we had to sit down and have probably, I think it was about a 3 or 4 hour chat with he and his coach, Adolfo. And we talked about Alex to be patient, that it will come. He just needs to continue to work hard and continue to work and have the right attitude, and the results will come with it. So he started this year at 208 in the world, had a fantastic pre-season in Australia, and did well in Brisbane and well in Sydney, and then the aim was to make the top 100. So when you saw him at Surbiton, he had just reached his goal for this year, which was to be top 100, and everything from then on's been a bonus. He is a nice boy, comes from a good family, close to his family. He's a hard worker. He's quite mature for 19, which is hard to find. And look, he treats people the way he wants to be treated, and it's important that we continue that he stays like that, that he stays grounded. I don't think it's going to be that hard. He's a very humble young man. And so, you know, our job sometimes as a manager is just to keep him on track from that point of view, make sure he doesn't get ahead of himself, let his natural personality come through, which is very strong for him, very good personality, and I think that's what helps.
It's that one word that comes up whenever people talk about Alex, whether it's yourself, Kerry, or whether we're speaking to David, his agent, it's humble. People talk about him as being a young, humble player. And when we spoke to Ross Hutchins, it was a sentiment that he echoed.
Humble, down to earth, lightning fast, very knowledgeable of his game style, tremendous relationship with Leighton Hewitt, highly respected by the players, and someone that will be a really tough player to shove away from the higher echelons of the sport for many years to come.
But you were a lucky charm for Alex, because you watched him at Surbiton where he achieved something, you know, the top 100. And then he goes to Nottingham and I'm there on my desk back on Ace Magazine. And all I can talk about is Cam Norrie, because he's one of my lovies and he's the number one ranked player there. He's the number one seed. And you kept telling me, no, Alex is going to win this week. And then throughout the week, you're watching Dan Evans and Alex all the way to the final where they faced each other.
It was an interesting week for me at Nottingham for a whole host of reasons. I saw lots of great players, but following Alex through the week was interesting. I remember speaking to him after every game and being told by the media people, it's very strange for people to want to speak to the same player day after day after day. And I said, yeah, but I'm following this guy. I've been following him now for a couple of tournaments and I'm interested to see how things are developing for him. And Alex and I would talk after each game. And I remember after the second game that he won there, I said to him, what are your hopes for this season? And he was very forthright. He said, oh, my dream would be to get to the next gen in Milan. And of course, you know, how prophetic was that? But then he actually got to the final where he played Dan Evans. And that was an incredible match. They both played wonderful tennis, but Alex came through and he won that tournament. And I remember speaking to him afterwards and we actually had our photos taken with the trophy. And I thought, I actually feel part of something, you know, in my own small way. I do feel as though I contributed to that win.
You look like the cat that got the cream as you stood there with Alex and his trophy.
It was my first trophy.
Together.
Together, yes.
There's Leighton Hewitt, there's David Drysdale, and there's Kerry Levy.
And who does Alex choose to get his photo taken with? Well, actually, I did actually say to David, can I have my photo taken with Alex? It's about the only time I've ever done that in my life. But, you know, it did feel like a monumental moment in his career and my career as a burgeoning tennis correspondent.
And David said?
Yes.
How did he say it?
He said, yeah, mate. Yeah, go on.
The great thing about Nottingham was he'd been in a few finals and never won any. So to have that win, and it was against Dan Evans, who's a good player on grass, classy player. So to have that win really boosted his confidence, and that was very important to him. So he'd made the final in Surbiton but lost. I mean, Shardy played a tremendous game. So it was important that he won in Nottingham. And from that, he had the confidence then to have a great US swing, US summer. He just seems to be going from strength to strength, but he also knows that the further he goes, the harder he has to work.
So Alex is very much a next gener in that he's that young. After Milan, he couldn't just simply end his season by cashing another check and going to lay on Bondi Beach or somewhere else in Australia. He had something else he had to do, didn't he, Kerry?
Yeah, he had to go and take his driving test. And then he had to go to the ATP University in London, which I don't even know what that is. Do you?
So the ATP University is an initiative set up by the Players' Council, and it's for the players ranked in the top 200 places. It's been going since 1990. And the whole purpose of it is just to educate those young players, especially in the challenges that they're going to be facing on and off court. And it's just a way of the ATP giving these players some social responsibility, but also, you know, making them feel more adult and more businesslike about how they manage their lives and manage their careers.
Look, he's a very relaxed sort of kid, loves a joke. We have a lot of fun. You know, we could, if he's got an afternoon off, we could end up going and have a game of mini golf or things like that. So we try to do things together. We try to keep his mind away from tennis. So from all that sort of, and mixing with other Australians helps with him. So it can be a lot of fun. We try to have as much fun as we can because it's a pretty monotonous lifestyle.
Yes. We're going to keep you company.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, I've got to try and keep up with you.
Yeah.
Well, you gave our record a bit of a scare tonight there.
Yeah, it was a tough match. Definitely had my chances in the fourth, but it didn't want to go that way. There was some close balls, and I'm happy I was able to regroup.
And what, you know, those match points, do they affect you when they go that way against you? Or do you just try and clear it out of your mind?
Net is in English.
Okay. Well, in the moment, it definitely does affect you. But you've got to find a way to just regroup and reset and focus on the following set. And that's something that I'm very happy how I managed it today.
And moving on to something else completely different. When we first met and we did that first press talk in Surbiton, there was no one about. And now you're seeing press all the time. You're getting asked questions all the time. How are you finding that sort of change in sort of approach towards you?
Well, it's definitely something you got to get used to. But at the end of the day, it's what comes with this sport. I mean, I've been playing some incredible tennis, and if that wasn't the case, then I wouldn't be getting this much media. So it's been a great year, and I'm enjoying it.
I mean, I guess in a way it's sort of a validation for you that you're going in the right direction, that people want to speak to you and talk to you all the time.
Yeah, for sure, and that's one of the important things out here. So I just got to try and keep on doing what I'm doing off the court as well as on the court.
And how do you cope with people asking you the same question over and over, and you have to give everyone an answer that sounds exciting?
Well, I'm getting used to it. I'm starting to memorize my answers. I just got to change it up a little bit and you know, give a different answer to different people. But at the end of the day, it's almost the same.
Well, I think you're coping with it really well. I hope it keeps on growing for you. And after tomorrow, after the final, what's your ambitions for a bit of rest and relaxation? I hear you're going to drive, aren't you?
Well, I'm going to try and get my driver's license, but hopefully I don't fail. We'll see what happens, but definitely forget about tennis for a while. It's been a long season, a very tough one, and I'm really looking forward to the last match of the season.
Brilliant. Alex, thank you for giving me a summer of great fun. I'm really glad to see how it's going for you, and I'm sure we'll see each other next year.
Sounds good, no problem.
Good luck tomorrow, mate.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Alex.
David.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, cheers, mate. David.
Thank you.
And we'll keep in touch. I'll send you all those things through and let you know about this as well.
All right. Take it easy.
Cheers. Sorry we're not here tomorrow.
Kerry, this way. You got your interview after waiting all week then?
Finally, we get it, the last major one. And I thought it was quite nice as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I noticed that he's a little bit edgy, a little bit nervous maybe in the press conference. I could see his feet going. But he holds himself well, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's charming. You know, it's as David, his manager, said, you know, he's a grounded kid who's really learning to deal with the situations. You know, we've seen him deal with tennis, we're seeing him deal with the media. I loved it when he was talking about the fact that he's memorized certain lines to use and things. You know, maybe he's got to change them now he's told us that, but I think he's a fantastic character.
And perfect timing, because as we finished that interview just now, we're walking back into the main arena where he's gone into a fifth set for the other semi-final between Tsitsipas and Rublev. So let's get to that and see who he meets in the final.
I think I know who it'll be. One of these two.
So after your summer of love with Alex, leading into the romance of Milan, Alex has gone on to build on that success. We've seen him win in Sydney when he beat the likes of Opelka and Thompson en route to taking the title there. And then he got far into the Aussie Open, the round of 32. But as so many of this next gen are finding out, when they face Rafa Nadal, they're not quite there yet. And Rafa did to him what he did at Wimbledon by winning in straight sets. And
you know that he actually needed me there. You see, if I'd have been there, I don't think he'd have lost necessarily.
Exactly. You weren't there at Wimbledon. You weren't there in Australia.
Do you see a pattern emerging here?
Maybe.
Yeah.
You need to get onto David Drysdale to get a flight to the next event.
I've actually offered up my services as official mascot to him.
You can be his faith healer.
No, we're getting into the realms of strangeness then, and you know me, I'm not that strange.
But I think what it shows is the form he's had this year, it validates our story in that we're trying to pick these players and predict where they're going. No one's quite sure, even they're not sure, but you see what's happening with Alex and the others that we've seen at the next gen and the players that are also maybe a little bit ahead of them, that the tide is turning. And of course, scheduling meant in Milan, we had to miss the final. We nearly missed many trains. We nearly missed our last train out of the exhibition centre on after the semi-finals because play finished so late. And while they were playing the next-gen final, we were in the air flying back to London. And
I just say, you organised our travel. You made us miss the flight because I think it was £8 cheaper to go that night.
It's because I wanted Stefanos to win. But Stefanos beat Alex in the final and you weren't there.
You are so cunning. I knew something was up. So that was it. It wasn't budgetary. You were taking the mascot away. So, Alex, I'm very, very sorry that I wasn't there, but it's all Gary's fault.
And it's interesting that what we have seen in 2019, because both players have gone on to build on that promise from last year.
Come March 2019, Tsitsipas was ranked at 11 in the world and Alex was ranked at 26. So we are seeing this next gen is really the now gen.
And it sets us up perfectly for chapter 5 of Dropshot, which will be all about the Tsitsipas bounce.
The Tsitsipas bounce. You termed it that, didn't you?
Boing.
Until next time, this is Dropshot. Dropshot is written and produced by Gary Hayes and me, Kerry Levy. Audio editing and sound mixing by Sounds Like These. Special thanks to Ollie Slack and Taylor Hayes. Music for this episode was composed by Jimmy Goodwin. Our thanks go out to Mark Epps and Edward LaCava from the ATP. We would also like to thank David Drysdale. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at This Is Dropshot. This has been a PML Studio production.